Free Fire Radio. Good morning, North State. Welcome to Free Fire Radio and KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media and Carl and Linda Bott. Good morning, 7:05. Today is the day for 55% of you. It's tax day. That's right. It's tax day. And guess what? We already did ours. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Bad Bob.
Sir.
Did you do yours?
That was done some time ago. You know, what was it?
You guys are organized.
You guys are organized. Yeah, you know, I can't
see. Oh, she saved me, man.
I can't see Brenda not letting you do taxes on time. Today they're extending the post office hours. So those recalcitrants, those people that waited to the last second to pay the extortion.
I like that word. What was that word?
Extortion.
No, before that.
Recalcitrant.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, you know what? You know, here's the thing is, I know that taxes are something we have to do. If you're going to have an armed force, if you're going to have infrastructure, if you're going to have many of the things we have in our lives that make our lives livable, you need taxes. That's just the way it is. The question is who pays? Who doesn't? But speaking of paying and being the person to go to on a day like this to brighten my day on tax day, it's Linda.
Well, that was nice. I was like,
yes.
What a weird segue. But
I was lost. I was lost halfway
speaking
through
of
it,
pain,
but I jumped in.
You know, you'll be glad if you have a chin after that.
But you know what else is happening today?
Payback is not bad, though.
They're also having a big, walk across the Sundial Bridge today. You know, tax day. That's right.
George Washington and all those guys are going to cross the Potomac.
I think you're going to be seeing that. You're going to be seeing people across the Potomac.
You know, I want to share with our listeners
and our
chat packers today, you know, of course, Casey and our 1460. We're going to be engaging with you today. This is the kickoff this week of survival of the fittest. Are you ready? We're having experts in, all that good stuff. Meanwhile, you know, we've been rewiring our studio, and we really want to thank Bob Belongi. I mean, Bob Belongi, he was here all weekend. You know, we've got some really interesting things to be, you know, we're going to get through this week and kick off some things that to tell you about later on in the week, some new programming and some new personalities, et cetera. But the wiring is really interesting, and a new board, which means that, it's really fun because it's contemporary.
It's a board that was built this year instead of...
Well, I was alive.
You know, here's the other thing we also like to thank Jim Brimmer. You know, besides the new board trail, we also got new satellite receivers and all this. And you're saying, how can this be happening? It's because of your support that we're being able to do this and bring in new equipment, bring in the wiring, bring in all this new stuff. Jim Brimmer, who, as you know, is no longer with us, put in the satellite receiver over the weekend. And gave classes to a few of us to which buttons to push. So we cannot think. As usual, Jim is still coming through for us till the day he leaves. So, Jim, thank you very, very much. And a big shout-out to you. We're going to miss you, my friend. Now, but first we're going to take a break. Then we're going to come back. We're going to talk about weather. We're going to talk about taxes. And did you know there's too much oil in the market? Well, we're going to talk about that. Carl and Linda Bott, KCNR 1460. It is 7:10 in the morning, and this is Free Fire Radio. Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It is
Monday,
the 18th. It's tax day. It's walk across the Sundial Bridge day. It's watching people in boats boat across the Sacramento dressed like Revolutionary War type of guys.
What time?
Colonial guys.
You said that happens on April 15th, but they decided to put that into today, which is really, I guess, officially, this is the extension of tax day because April 15th obviously fell on Saturday. Now, what time does that event start on the bridge?
We'll find out. I think it's around 6. But I'm not sure. We'll find out.
Okay.
I'm sure somebody will tell us here.
Currently 53 degrees. If you're just tuning in, you're on KCNR. It's 7:13 in the morning, and of course we're going to have lots of showers today. 80% chance of showers. Well, you know, when they say that, that means it's just, you know, it's not going to be
already
heavy rain, but we're going to have our temperatures are going to be high today of 66. And Bob just yawned. And
I think everybody heard that. Hey, Bob, do we...
Hey, but Bob drinks coffee. Well, Bob, thanks. I'm glad you're sipping your coffee.
You know what? Let's. You know, we need a cone of silence for Bob sometimes.
Bob.
Maybe a plastic bag.
I went Bob.
After he gets the board in.
Oh, when Bob decides he's going to have his power bar. Okay, so tonight there's going to be 20% chance of showers. Well, you know what happened. You know what was really weird? I'm going to go a little bit about what happened this day in history, which really is a great segue into our preparedness week. It's not weird, but it just, you know, when you flash back to your childhood, the day as a kid, this is the week before Easter. So, like, what was on last night? We're up to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz.
Yes, we watched it
with commercials.
Every year.
But anyway, so this is the week of usually my, I don't know what you guys, if you had a tradition, but with our family tradition, we would go to Soquel, Santa Cruz, rent a place for the week. My dad would crab. We would eat seafood all week.
Which he still does. Or he's crabby.
He's got the crab nets, boy. But it would always be a week where we'd be on the beach, and it would be like just like now. It'd be like maybe it wouldn't be fabulous weather, but it would be sunny and spotty and all that stuff. But anyway, so just kind of curious, what did you do on your week before Easter break or during Easter break? Did you have a tradition? Well, let's get to the phones before we go into the same history. Somebody who definitely knows a lot about history is our caller this morning. Good morning, Gary. You're live.
Good morning. Yes, I am alive, and it's a wonderful day in the neighborhood.
It is.
And I'm Carl. Carl, how are you?
I am absolutely peachy.
Did you receive my email regarding the motorcycles? Said there are a lot of pictures. I don't know if it came through or not. But anyway.
No, I didn't get that one. I check all
well,
my mail.
Reason for my call. The Sundial Freedom Festival is today.
Right.
And that's at, it begins, the first part of it begins at 5 o'clock.
Okay.
On Hilltop Drive across from Sears, and there will be a flag processional, in other words, a nice walk, so bring your flags, down the new part of the river trail, which goes along Highway 44, and it then connects to the south end of the Sundial Bridge. And then at 5:30 or thereabouts, George Washington and Paul Revere will be there, and bagpipes and drums and such will begin the festival there. And yours truly is Patrick Henry in the costume, if it does not rain, and reading from Patrick Henry. So there will be children's games, and there will be a lot of displays from the various tea parties and such, and things that are inform the people about America and the Constitution, and we'll have a wonderful time celebrating this great country of ours.
That's great, Gary. You know what? That's a good way to go out and celebrate Tax Day. It's a good way to say, hey, you know what? This is our country. We love our country. And what a better way to show how much you love your country by saying, you know what? Some things may need to be changed here. I mean, that's the greatest thing about America, is that we can decide that we don't want to agree with the government, and then we want to change, and then we change it through the election process.
We like the fact that you're calling it the Freedom Festival.
Well, that's more ways than one tax day. At least you're free. You've paid your taxes or something like that. And, so all the tea parties are a part of it, and that's all of America is part of it. So it's the Sundial Freedom Festival, 5 o'clock if you want to begin on up on Hilltop, and 5:30 if you want to start at the bridge and welcome George Washington and such, who, by the way, is coming across the Sacramento River.
Yeah, as he did last year. Now, and also people need to understand, you don't need to be a member of the Tea Party to do this. This is just somebody, you know, you can just come out there, walk across the bridge, have a good time, and say, hey, you know what, we love our country, and we love the Constitution. You don't have to be a member of anything to do this.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You're a member of our wonderful society. You're an American.
There you go. Okay, hey, thanks a lot,
Gary. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, how do you like that? This day in history, do you know that on April 18th at 5:13 a.m., an earthquake estimated at a close to 8.0 on the Richter scale strikes San Francisco, killing hundreds of people as it topples numerous buildings.
In 1906.
The quake, that's right, April 18th, 1906, I was getting to that. The quake was caused by a slip of the San Andreas fault over a segment of about 275 miles, and shockwaves could be felt from southern Oregon down to L.A. San Francisco's brick buildings and wooden Victorian structures were especially devastated. Fires immediately broke out, and because broken water mains prevented firefighters from stopping them, firestorms soon developed citywide. At 7 a.m., U.S. Army troops from Fort Mason reported to the Hall of Justice in San Francisco. Mayor E.E. Schmitz called for their enforcement of a dusk to dawn curfew and authorized soldiers to shoot to kill anyone found looting. Meanwhile, in the face of significant aftershocks, firefighters and U.S. troops fought desperately to control the ongoing fire, often dynamiting whole city blocks to create firewalls.
Right.
By April 23rd, most fires were extinguished, and authorities commenced the task of rebuilding in the devastated metropolis. Can you believe how long the fires lasted?
Yeah, and the thing is that it started on the 18th, right? And it wasn't until the 23rd that they started putting it down, and they were blowing up entire blocks. Now,
3,000 people died, and over right. 30,000 buildings were destroyed.
And before we take our break, this segues perfectly into what we're doing this week. This week is emergency preparedness week, my friends. After what happened, we've been talking about it, about, hey, we need to do this, we need to do this. And then in Japan, we had the tsunami. And then it's the kind of thing that says, are we ready? Are people actually ready in case there is emergency? So what we're going to do this entire week, starting at 8 o'clock this morning and on through the week, including with Police Chief Peter Hansen, will be discussing emergency preparedness, too, as far as the police go, as part of his subjects. And then Friday at Tobacco and Brew at noon. Now, we're going to have our regular show, of course, from 7 to 9. But at noon, we're going to take all of this equipment and all these things that we're talking about, as much as we can possibly haul down there, and put it Tobacco and Brew at 2143 Hilltop Drive out in their conference room there, and let you take a look at it. That's right, take a look at what we're talking about. But now we've got to take a quick break. Carl and the Bot, it is 7:21 in the morning on Tax Day, April the 18th, and this is Free Fire Radio. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media and Carl and Linda Bott. Good morning, 7:24 on Tax Day, the 18th. And speaking of taxes, you realize that only 45% of the people in the United States are going to be paying taxes, that you pay less taxes now than you used to, is that the super wealthy, and this is, okay, I'm going to call them the super wealthy because the Internal Revenue Service tracks the tax returns of the 400 highest adjusted gross incomes each year. The average income on these returns in 2007 was $345 million. Their average federal income tax rate was 17%, down from 26% in 1992. Now, the average federal income tax rate for all taxpayers declined to 9.3% from 9.9%. So, the other part, 45% of U.S. households will pay no federal income taxes for 2010. Yes, they will continue to pay Social Security and property taxes, those kind of things. But no income taxes. Now, why is that? Because there are so many deductions. There are so many credits. There are so many things that are in the tax code. And by the way, can I, as a business owner, small business owner, can I do my own taxes? I probably could, but then I couldn't run my business because I would have to learn how to do my taxes. And that is incredibly, incredibly difficult.
Have you ever done your taxes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've done my taxes before plenty of times, but it was usually just me. And then sometimes it seems to me years ago, I could write off my, I could write off my house, and I could write off that kind of stuff. But now, I mean, there are things in the tax code that are just incredible. And you know what? They've gotten it. There's so many changes. You can't even e-file part of your income tax forms. I understand this. I just heard this one over the weekend. There's still parts of the forms that they still are emailing them to or submitting an e-form to the IRS is they're not available. I don't know if that's still true, but it was just a few days ago. And what about, you know, the thing about it is that they can't touch the deductions for many of these because it's middle class and lower middle class people. I mean, how are you going to take away? What are you going to take away? You're going to take away their mortgage deduction? I don't think so. I mean, how many people would buy a house then? I mean, right now, I mean, the housing market isn't such a huge, huge problem. Are you going to cut back on, what are you going to cut back on? What things are you going to cut out? Now, it just doesn't seem right, though, that 45% of this country doesn't pay taxes. That means that 55% of us, and I say us because I do pay taxes, is making up all of that. Now, it's also, from what I understand, is that it's that top 1% or 2% pay like 30% of the taxes that go into the states or goes into the feds.
Well, we know that a lot of people are going to be thinking about this. Well, they have been thinking about it all year long because today is the day, and we do have extended hours at Churn Creek for the post office for those people who have to, you know, get in their taxes at the last minute. I do not envy those of you, and I'm not pointing my finger, but those who wait till the last minute has to be nerve-wracking.
Well, I'm sure it does. You know, when I was just, you know, it does because people are waiting till that last minute. And you know that, you know, we have friends that are CPAs that do taxes. And I tell you what, watching their usual sunny disposition go down in the last week. There's some exceptions to this, of course, but they're trying to get everything. And then, you know, the people that bring their tax returns to them don't bring everything they need. And here they are still trying to do stuff at the last minute. But let me go back just for a second. It says that half of the nation's top tax revenue came from the top 10% of the earners. More than 44% came from the top 5% of the wealth. And so the people that are at the top of the food chain when it comes to money also pay the vast majority of the income taxes, too. Again, 45% don't pay. It seems like... that doesn't seem equitable there. Yes, I mean, you know, the top are paying it, you know, they should pay their share and all that, but it seems like there should be more people paying into their income tax if I am. I mean, I'm no millionaire, even anything close to it.
Anyway. By the way, before we take we've got 30 seconds before we take our break, a shout out to all of those wonderful volunteers that really helped us to have a very successful, meaning us, the city of Reading and the North State, to have a fantastic event with Cool April Nights. Really, hopefully we'll get somebody in this week that is going to recap what they saw, what they had, and if they had some kind of count.
This is Carl Linda Bott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460, a home of Free Fire Media and Carl Linda Bott, 7:35 in the morning on tax day, April the 18th. And this portion of the show is brought to you by B&T Satellite. B&T Satellite, 244-1988, dish satellite at its best, a local company. Do not call the 800 number. Let me say it again. Do not call the 800 number. That is not a local business. 244-1988, Doug Tooley will take care of your dish needs. He does great work. He does it quick. He does it professionally, and he guarantees his work. That's Doug Tooley, B&T Satellite, 244-1988. Do not call the 800 number.
We've had a long, it was like a long winter, and we're just so ready for the sun to come out and for spring to appear, and that means, you know, of course, we're starting to garden. And I think we had a beautiful day, I think Saturday or Friday. It was yummy warm, like you wanted to dig your fingers in the soil. Currently 53 degrees right now if you're tuning in. And, of course, today's going to be high of 66 with 80% chance of showers. Tonight, 20% chance with slight showers into the lows of 46. And I was talking about just a second ago about what it felt like when the weather gets yummy and warm. And the camellias are starting to come out, but we're now getting ready for rose season. And with us this morning are our experts, Bob Parker and Carol Schmitz from the Shasta Rose Society. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And, gosh, last year you were here. Time flies. And you are having a day in the Rose Garden where you're going to, then this is free to the public, Saturday, May 7th. Carol, why don't you share with us last year what the event was like and what we're looking forward towards this year?
Well, last year was the first year that we did a day in the Rose Garden. We normally have done rose tours of several gardens, and we decided and charged tickets. So we decided to try something different, and we had a day in the Rose Garden. It was at my Rose Garden, and we had about 200 people, and it was so exciting because it was the first nice spring day, and so everybody came out in the sunshine, and my roses didn't all come out in the sunshine that day, but the plants were, it was, everyone had a great time. We had a plant sale, we had a raffle, we had a boutique. As I said, everyone bought plants, shared, looked at the yard, and just spent hours wandering around the yard.
Well, if you love your roses, and, you know, there's so many, are there new roses that have been created this year?
There's new roses every year.
Okay, and we're talking to our master gardener, Bob, and you, last year we had some, we're going to go into some questions I'm sure a lot of people are wanting to know, and we also have our chat room open, but Bob Parker, you are a master gardener, and last year, right?
I'm not a master gardener, I'm a master rosarian.
Oh!
There's a difference between them.
Okay, could you share with us what that is?
A master gardener is one that's trained in general plant care. It's through the UC Davis thing.
Okay. That's what I say when I thing. You got, you know what I mean, all right.
And a master rosarian is someone who has been certified a consulting rosarian by the American Rose Society, demonstrating their knowledge of growing roses. And once you've done it for a long time and become an old guy like me, you can be a master rosarian.
I like that.
So I'm a consulting rosarian and a master gardener, but Bob is 10 years more ahead of me on the consulting part.
So you guys are definitely the experts in soil, and it shows here in the flyer that you guys brought in that there's going to be over 130 miniature roses for sale as other roses, unusual plants for Redding's climate. Now, what is that, for instance? Unusual plants for Redding's climate.
Well, it's plants that we've found that do well. Typically, most of them are perennials. And as we all know, perennials come back every year. And they're wonderful, so you don't have to spend a lot of money, spend a lot of time replanting them. But perennials need to be divided periodically, and so we divide and share.
Now, there's probably a master, like you guys, there's a master website. Is there a master website?
There is a master website, ShastaRoseSociety.org, and it has all the upcoming events and pictures of past events and things like that.
Well, the reason I say that is because as many of us go out and we think that we want to go buy the $6.99 rose, there probably are pros and cons to that. Can you share with us as we go to various stores and they have a special, you know, weekend special where you can get your roses for $6.99?
Usually,
what are the pros and cons, Bob?
Usually, that's not a good idea. Usually, those roses aren't cared for very well. You find bare root roses. They're the ones that are usually at $6.99. And bare root roses are graded. There's the number one and a half, and number two. Number two roses are usually the cheapest, but they're usually not worth buying because they are usually unhealthy. I believe that roses, just like people, there's healthy plants and there's plants that just are susceptible to illness all the time. And I think the number two roses just will never perform and you'll never be happy with what you're buying.
Well, before we take a break, I have to share with you that we have a lemon tree that didn't produce but one lemon. And then my dad, who loves to garden, came up a year ago and said, you know, you need to put, well, what's the stuff that we...
Acid.
some kind of acid. And we put it on around that tree.
I think he said acid. Isn't
well,
that what you
it
put on?
He gave us
what
the name
on,
of it. Yeah.
It was some type of fruit tree fertilizer or some citrus tree fertilizer.
Right, yeah. But he said acid, didn't he?
Yeah, well, something
well,
like
well,
that.
Potassium.
There was a buzzer. It was granule. So... And it did produce. We have like seven lemons.
We were supposed to put it on like three times. I put it on once, and we got like eight lemons.
Yeah.
Sorry. Maybe I should have put it on three times.
Then you would have had 24 lemons.
Right. There you go.
So, still, the six are still on the tree because we just look at them every day we walk by. These are looking great.
Well, we are going to have to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about fertilizer and myths and facts and all that good stuff. We'll be right back after these messages. Casey and our 1460.
Yeah. 60, Carl Lindabot, home of Free Fire Media. It is 7:44 in the morning on tax day, the 18th, the day that we pay our final taxes.
I wish you quit calling it tax day.
Well, it is tax day. This is tax day
it's
today.
It's depressing.
Well, you know what?
You can't get around it, right? Whether you like it or not,
you
get
you know,
taxes.
Well, you can always extend your tax things. Okay. But, okay, hey, look, our chat room is filled up. And I'd just like to say hello to everybody.
Hi, good morning.
And Sharon and Angel and... there's Hockey Man and Tax Man and very many, many, many others that are on here. Tax Man's on there just running wild. Okay, today we are talking about roses.
Right now, this morning.
Longer than I thought we were going to, but it's interesting.
No, it's so interesting. And we're with Bob Parker and Carol Schmidt.
And I have a question. If somebody says they were growing these topsy-turvy tomato things, have you seen those?
Yes.
They said they can't get their tomatoes to grow any other way. Is that because they're doing something wrong?
Are those upside down things?
Do they live in Reading, really?
Yeah, they live in Reading.
Well, I don't know. I mean, here's our experts. Can you give us a little advice on that?
Well, I've not tried the topsy-turvy because in Reading, with our heat in the summertime, it's hard enough to keep anything in the soil wet enough. Talk nothing about something that's hanging upside down in a minimal amount of dirt. But, you know, if it works for them, hey. Don't knock success.
Other people are using coffee grounds and things for their roses. Does that help? And worm casings.
Ooh,
castings.
Worm castings are fabulous. Coffee grounds are good. Snails and slugs don't particularly like coffee grounds either, but they do add a natural element to the soil.
We'd have hyperworms. Who don't know? Anyway, worms on steroids. Okay, Bob Parker and Carol Schmitz with the Shasta Rose Society. Let's come back to this. First of all, Saturday, May 7th, from 10 to 4, the home of Brent and Linda Walton, and we'll give you the address in a moment. There's going to be over 130 miniature roses for sale, as well as other roses, raffles, prizes. And they're going to be, of course, our master rosarians that will be there to give any advice on how you can have a successful rose garden.
We always enjoy you all coming in here and talking about this because roses are beautiful. We have roses in our front yard.
We're going to have more roses, too. And so one of the things I asked you at the break was if I were to plant or we were to plant five to go find, seek out five of the most fragrant roses, what would you say right now, the top two?
Well, the one that comes into my mind first is Fragrant Cloud. It's an older rose, been around since the 50s. It's very, very fragrant, a nice orangey shade of red.
Ooh, I love that. It's my favorite.
And it's just super, super fragrant.
And we also have the Barbra Streisand Lavender Rose.
There'll be no Barbra Streisand Lavender Rose at our house.
She taught me how to sing. Don't go there.
There will not
we don't
be.
Want to talk
Why
about
don't you
our
just
politics,
bring in the
but
Jane,
guess what?
The Jane Fonda cactus, too.
You know what? Stop it there already, because, you know, she still is a phenomenal artist.
You know, it's... All right. Let me talk about this one comment. When you said that the that slugs don't like coffee grounds, and somebody said, well... You know, I don't like my wife's coffee. Does that make me a slug? Good comment. I like that.
We have some real wonderful people in the chat room. That obviously you hear where we receive more chats than we do phone calls. So, okay, parting thoughts here from our master gardeners, Bob Parkins and.
No, there's one master gardener.
Is it Bob Parker?
Bob Parker.
And
yes.
I was calling you Parker. Sorry, okay, Bob Parker and Carol Schmitz with the Shasta Rose Society.
There is one master gardener, and that's Carol. And there's one master
rosarian
and
but
that's
you're
Bob.
Also rosarians.
You're,
yes.
Okay.
Right.
You guys are masters in my mind. But, you know, I understand that, so sorry. Okay,
One parting thought that I have, when we say we have miniature roses for sale, it's the only place in Reading that you can buy them. Most of the nurseries do not have named miniature roses. So we have 130, and which means we have about 18 different miniature roses, and they're named, and they're gorgeous. And they will be $6, and it's a bargain.
Wow.
And yeah. that's at the May
7th?
And it is at
the Day in the Rose Garden. And then the other roses that we have for sale, for instance, Star Roses donated some roses to us. So those will be for sale for $16 in a 5-gallon can, and that also is a bargain.
So I'm thinking, you know, right behind our house there where we don't have anything growing, I've always dreamed of having an arbor and having a beautiful rose garden back there.
You're going to have to be a little more specific than that. There's a lot of places there's nothing growing in the backyard except moss. I can't figure out how moss grows on the ground like that. Maybe it's a fungus.
I'm picturing a beautiful rose arbor with roses climbing up over it, fragrant roses climbing over it. So the fragrance wafts into the house.
There you go. Well,
maybe
right over the back, right through the bathroom window.
And take a look and say, oh, you know, this could work.
Well, we just have to have water running back there, which we can do. But anyway, so I've just been a dream. I can visualize it. And I think that's the beautiful thing about the day that you'll be having on May 7th. People can come to the home of Brent and Linda Walton, and you know what? We're going to post that address. How does one get in touch with you about the event? Is there a phone number or, again, the website? Let's see. You've got 242-1901.
That's my phone number.
Right. They can call you to find out where is Inverness, which is the home, 3120 Inverness Street in Reading. And people can come and get their
fix.
True fix, their advice, their, here's, you know, I have this kind of soil, and maybe you can say, okay, you need to do this, and this is what you can do. And, I mean, we all just think we can dig a hole and grow a rose, but it doesn't work like that.
Is there any place online they can find this?
ShastaRoseSociety.org.
Okay.
They can find it.
Bob.
And
okay.
Closing thoughts.
The purpose of this thing is to raise money for a scholarship we give annually at Shasta College. It's a good cause. We give it to a horticulture student, $750 scholarship every year, and that is the purpose of this, and that's why we would like the support of the community.
Wow!
Super.
Plus, they have fun. They get to see all of Linda's gorgeous roses.
Okay, now you have to promise me that when you choose the scholarship, whoever wins it, that they come back and they talk about how that's helped their life or how it's affected their life. And are they into roses? Or are they now becoming into roses because of your wonderful generosity?
Most of them generally don't go into roses, but they go into some gardening aspect.
Horticulture,
yeah. Yes. And they all are very appreciative. We always have them come and speak at our meeting immediately after the scholarship is awarded. And we just think it's a good cause.
Okay, well, we're going to have to go, but you'll let us know when that happens. Again, the event is May 7th, Saturday, May 7th, from 10 to 4.
At the home of Brent and Linda Walton at 3120 Inverness Street in Reading. And
Shasta Rose Society. We'll
Bob
be there
Parker
in the morning.
And Carol Schmitz. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break here and we'll come back and we'll get ready for our next segment. Welcome back to Pre-Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl on the Bot, 7:55 in the morning. It's a portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew. We're going to be down there Friday on our emergency preparedness week. Espresso Joe's, finest walk-in humidor in the state. And that's at 2143 Hilltop Drive. Let's go to the phones real quick. Kay, good morning.
Good morning, Carl and Linda.
How are you?
Oh, fine, thank you. I just wanted to call and thank you so much for the tickets to A Bench in the Sun.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, it was wonderful.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it, and thanks for listening. That's what happens, you know. Every so often we score some tickets here that we can give away, and we'd love to share it with our listeners.
Yeah, well, that was really a wonderful present.
Great.
Thank you so much.
You
have
bet.
A good day.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Hey, joining us is Vicki Shattuck from KIXE, and we're talking about the Art, Wine, and Travel Auction.
Yes.
April 19th and 20th, but there's going to be a sneak preview.
No, the sneak preview's over.
Oh,
that was last Saturday. Boy, it comes fast.
Wait a minute, what day is this?
I know.
Oh, today's
the
18th.
Yes.
We're talking about this week.
This week, and it's tomorrow, Tuesday and Wednesday night, which is the first time we've done it on a Tuesday, Wednesday night, so I got to make sure everybody knows about it. It is our KIXE Art, Wine, and Travel, so this is also the first time we've combined travel with our art and wine auction. So I just want to make sure everybody knows and give them an idea of some of the things that we have that you can buy. First off, not only am I going to name off some of the things, but if anybody wants to view and see what we have and get a description of everything, it's at www.kixe.org, and we have all the art with pictures. And not only do we have artists, we have glass pottery and glass art and jewelry and wines. So I'm just going to name off a few of the artists around here so people might know something that they want to go check out. We've got Dennis Halkidis, which is from Gallery 833, The Attorney, Barbara Nokian, Michael Carnes, Brian Wolf, Roby Bear, Jeff Fennell, who painted live at our Art Hop, and Rayette Meredith, Norm Dillinger. So, like I said, go online and check out all these to see what you want. And some of our local wine vineyards, we have several of those. We have Vidal Vineyards, Mount Tehama, Bernsini, Matson, Orente, just to name a few, and we have wine adventures too. And then I know that everybody likes the Orient and Flume that's in Chico. So we've got several pieces donated by them, and Cherry Tree Studios, Sumo Glass, Holbrook's for your pottery. For jewelry, we have Acora Gems out there in Chico. Mark Stinson created a beautiful turquoise and silver bracelet. Holly Yashi from Marcata. Patricia Pierce, who does her jewelry works every time.
This sounds like really quality jewelry and artwork.
It all is, and it's our favorite, our local favorite.
Oh, yeah, you know what, and I think every year that we've managed to pick up some of that, and you'll find it at various places around here. What about travel? You say you have travel in this?
Yes, we have travel. Matter of fact, we have already gotten a flow of bids on the online for the travel. We have Lithia Springs Resort and Spa. They've got a two-night stay there. We have Hilton Hanaheim that's going with a four-course dinner. We have a Paso Robles Wine Festival weekend trip. And we have Air Shasta taking you to Anselmo for dinner. I'm just naming a few because there's way too many that I can go for.
There's so many.
But if you go online at kixe.org, you can check out everything. It tells you the prices, the minimum bid, and everything.
And you can start bidding early.
You can start bidding now. People already have.
You know? And what time does it start now?
It starts at 7 o'clock, both Tuesday and Wednesday night. So it's tomorrow, Tuesday, Wednesday night, 7 p.m., and it'll go till around 10:30. And check out everything online. If you have any questions, give me a call at 243-5493.
This is a great way to support our local PBS.
Yes, it
channel.
Is.
This is, I mean, they have y'all have done so much in the last 6, 7, 8 months to bring people in and to offer some really great things.
Right. We've got some really great businesses donating, and this is a way that you can support the station. You can have fun. You can buy art or you go for
get
traveling.
Get a great deal.
And get a great deal.
It is. You can get a great deal there. I mean, we have furniture in our office right now here at the station that came from one of
the auctions.
That's right.
Yep.
It came from the auctions.
Yeah, because we start everything at a third of the price, and some of our art we're starting at a quarter of the price. So you can't get art anywhere else for this price, and it's a good time. So anyway, check it out, kixe.org, or come on in and make sure you watch Bid and Buy tomorrow starting at 7 p.m., 19th and 20th.
There you go, Vicki Shattuck. Thank you so much. Again, call 243-5493 or tomorrow starting at 7 p.m.
7 o'clock.
There you go.
Channel 9.
You so much.
Thank you.
Carl Linda Bott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. This is Shasta Ready. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media, and Carl and Linda Bott, 8:05 on the morning of April the 18th. Some people call it tax day. Linda's kicked me in the knee twice because I keep saying tax day, and other people call it freedom day.
Have you survived? Are you surviving?
I think we're still paying the government off, aren't we? I think it goes into May or something like that. Maybe our guest will know when
we
get a hold of him.
The government's ever going to get paid off.
I know, but see, I think it's that you work for so long that, and it goes.
I think it's almost longer. It's almost to June now.
Yeah, it's longer every year.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And we're going to get to our guest in a minute. 53 degrees right now. If you're just tuning in, 80% chance of showers today with a high of 66. And tonight we're going to be looking at a slight chance of showers with lows of around 46 degrees. But right now we have a very special guest on the phone. Let's go to Elizabeth. Welcome. You are live on KCNR.
Happy tax day. And I guess that depends on whether you're paying or getting something back.
Let me click my heels.
Well, 45% of this country doesn't pay income taxes. So, I mean, you know.
I know. I read that yesterday. That's amazing.
Well, you know what? Here's my question. And maybe Mark can, because we have our guest, Mark Kent. Well, we're going to be talking, of course, emergency preparedness, but he also does tax stuff. Is that when they say they don't pay taxes, they still have to turn a return in. They just get their, they just don't have to pay anything to get their money back.
It depends on what kind of taxes you're talking about paying. Is it direct income taxes? Are they getting Social Security taken out of their wages and still getting a refund of their income tax? So, you know, when we talk about they're not paying any taxes, I think that's a little bit of a misnomer in some ways.
Well, they're not paying federal income tax. What it says, they still are paying Social Security. They still have to pay property taxes and all these things.
Right.
It's just the federal income tax.
Well, there's a redistribution of the wealth at the lower level is what it comes down to with the earned income credits. If you only make, let's say, $10,000 a year and you got a couple of kids, you might get a refund of $5,000. So they're actually taking it from one hand and giving it to the other, which is, I think, part of the problem.
Okay. That's no subject. Yeah. Okay, Elizabeth, sorry.
Not a problem. No, Mark's a great friend, and he was on the radio with me yesterday on We the People.
That's
and it
right.
was fabulous, so I'm excited for you guys this week. So I just wanted to touch bases about what we're doing at the Reading Tea Party tonight. We are going to be having a really fun rally beginning at 4 o'clock. We're going to have our folks standing along South Bonneview Road and holding signs that say things like, I registered a voter this year, I contacted my congressman, I attended a city council meeting. So we're going to have a this is what I did to make the world a better place rally. And that will go from 4 to 6 o'clock, and we're having a barbecue. And then we're going to actually watch a movie. We decided to put a fun spin on it, and we'll be watching Dave, and that's the movie.
Kevin
Kline plays the president. So very, very fun evening. I think everybody needs a little breather and something that's not too controversial, not too heavy on the mind. So it'll be a great time. So I encourage people to come out, hang out with us, bring a flag, have a hot dog, and join us for the movie.
Okay. All right, Elizabeth.
Really good.
What time's that start and where?
It's actually starting at 4 o'clock at the Bonneview Baptist Church at 2570 South Bonneview Road.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for your phone call.
Elizabeth,
you're welcome.
As usual.
Have a great week.
Thank you. You have a fabulous week.
You too. Bye.
All right.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, this is Emergency Preparedness Week.
Mark Kent is our guest.
How you doing today?
You know, you look like Mark Kent.
And we're going to be.
I'm never going to forget your name because you look like Mark Kent.
You know, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to start that. And you know, it's pretty apropos, I guess, because as Linda pointed out this morning, that in 1906, on this day in 1906, the San Francisco earthquake occurred. Thousands of people killed. Destruction widespread.
Days of fires.
The days of fires. Days of having to blow up, literally detonate city blocks to stop the fires. And here we are after one of the largest earthquake, I think, ever that in Japan that started the tsunami. And again, the quake in San Francisco was on the San Andreas Fault, which, by the way, is still there and still moves occasionally.
Absolutely.
In fact, we remember in 1989 we had another earthquake there. So this week, we've been talking about it, and we're going to start our Emergency Preparedness Week, and we're going to start this right after this message.
Good morning, North State, on the 18th of April, 8:13 in the morning, currently 53 degrees here. You're listening to KCNR 1460 on your dial. Happy to have you here this morning with Carl and myself, Linda. Carl and Linda Bott here on Free Fire Radio. Our guest this morning, as we kick off the week talking about emergency preparedness, with us this morning is Mark Kent. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
We're great. And for our listeners, Mark, can you give us just a, tell us who you are.
Well, I guess it all started with humble beginning.
We don't have that much time. Can we skip over the humble beginning?
Tell us when you came out of the womb, okay?
I guess, you know, when it comes to survival and preparedness, I got my start with my grandparents. They were come out of the Depression era, You know, they grew their own food, they're gardening, canned their own stuff. You know, so I lived up on the Klamath River for quite a while. So I was an avid hunter. You know, we hardly even bought our own meat at one point. We would go out and hunt it. So then I went into the service and taxes. And, you know, the whole time I've been an avid hunter, been involved in outfitting and so forth, and I got more and more into the survival and preparedness side as I went along. You know, Y2K was like a big shot off the bow for me. And I was actually driving into San Francisco at the 89 earthquake, you know, during the Bay Series with the Giants, and I saw a big building fall on a bunch of people. So I've always been kind of, you know, in the preparedness mode, I think, and more so these days with, you know, the way the world looks, you know. So in the last few years, I've gotten more and more into it. And that's kind of my background, you know, being in the Army and so forth. And then I went into taxes. That's a whole other story.
But another form of emergency
survival.
Preparedness.
Yeah,
survival, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think what I would want to kind of start off with here is we're talking about mental preparedness is probably the most important thing of all this. We can have all the gear that we want.
Well, let me, before we get started here,
okay.
Is one of the reasons we wanted to do this, and Linda and I talked about it. One time we lost power, I think, for like 4 hours or something. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, do I have a flashlight? And we did. But we had a flashlight, but it was, you know, one. And then we started thinking, and we, you know, extrapolating out that, well, if we only have one flashlight, and I know I've spent a long time in perilous places, and
right.
We were always prepared for everything.
Right.
And here I am sitting in my own home, and I've got one flashlight, and I have everything else that runs on power. How would I even find out the news?
Yeah, that's...
So that's what kind of started it with us. And then we started, you know, we've been doing some other things, but that's how we wanted to start this week. And just like, and that's why we invited Mark. And there's going to be other people this week also to be talking, just to get the mindset, which is what you started with. So I didn't mean to interrupt, but that's where we started with.
No, that's a perfectly okay. I mean, the thing is that this is so expansive that we could talk about this for a year almost. But so we got to start someplace and lay out a foundation and a groundwork. You know, a good experiment that you kind of reminded me to do is shut off your power for about 4 days. And then when you do that, every time you have to go use something, you can turn it back on. And if it's a really vital a part of your day, put a red sticker on it. And if it's just kind of, I like it, but I don't really need it, put an orange sticker. And then do that for about 3 or 4 days and see how many red stickers you have all over the house. You'll find out that there's a lot of things that you take for granted as not having. If it's not there, it's a big deal. Like taking a hot shower, for example.
Well, when Carl first came back from Iraq, and he moved to Reading, I'll never forget when he would go to the wash basin and wash his hands, that he would comment, "You're running the water too long,"
right.
Or "I'm running the water too long," because he just came out of.
You get used to scarcity,
yeah.
You know, and you learn how to deal with scarcity, so that it's a survival thing. So kind of with that, let's go into the mental preparedness thing. You know, most of survival and preparedness, if you read any of the books and talk to any of the experts, is being mentally prepared is the most important thing, and not having a victim mentality. You know, being prepared is saying, I'm going to take responsibility for myself and not leave it up to somebody else, not leave it up to the government or the police or the city council, so that I say, listen, I'm going to do whatever I can do to get prepared for the eventuality of a disaster of some sort, you know? I mean, dam failure, earthquake, fire, flood, there's so many different kinds of disasters that we could actually be subject to that not being prepared is just such a huge thing. But being mentally prepared, no matter how much equipment you have, is what you got to start with, because we can have all the equipment that we need to survive and sit in the middle of the woods and suck our thumb because we're not mentally prepared for it. So I think that's
in the
a good
fetal
start.
Position.
No, but that's true. You can have a lot of stuff, but you know, this is one of the
wow.
things that we always, you know, check for. The first thing, you know, is shock.
Right.
And shock occurs in so many different ways. But this is it. If a disaster happens, you may have the stuff, but are you prepared to use it?
Absolutely. So there's a training aspect of it. You got to get yourself a little bit mentally up. It's like going into a game. You know, you're going into the World Series. Are you going to be down for it? Are you going to be, you know, dragging your bat to the dugout? No. You got to get yourself into the mode, into the winning mode of I'm going to, you know, win. And by doing that, then the other things that you start utilizing will be much more advantageous to you, because now you got your mental processes going in the right direction. And I think that's probably the most important thing. To do a little more on that, is something that each of us have to look at ourselves inside and say, listen, do I have, am I mentally prepared for a disaster if it happens tomorrow? And I think that, if you just do that little bit of a self-examination, you'll start to discover that most of us have no preparation at all, if you're honest about it. So with that, that the way to start getting mentally prepared is start getting prepared with equipment and things that you're going to need.
And we're going to start with that right after this break. Our guest is Mark Kent. We're talking emergency preparedness. We're talking the mental outlook, but we're also talking the physical output, and that's where we're going to be talking as soon as we get back from these messages. This is KCNR 1460, and this is Free Fire Radio. On KCNR 1460, it's the home of Carl and Linda Bott, 8:23 in the morning on April the 18th. Some people would call it Tax Day. Other people would say it's Freedom Day. And other people would just say, oh, my God. this portion of the show is brought to you by BNT Satellite. BNT Satellite, 244-1988. That's Doug Tooley, puts in Dish Satellite. Don't call the 800 number. Also, Doug's got a deal for HDTV for life for you. You just need to talk to him about that. But he's a local guy. He's a veteran. He does great work. We use him at our house. We've never had a problem. He is very responsive to people. That's why you want to do your business with a local guy. That's Doug Tooley, BNT Satellite, 244-1988. Now, our guest is Mark Kent, and we've started this emergency preparedness series this week. And most times you don't spend a whole week on something like this. But we're going to have, from 8 o'clock in the morning each day, but just as other things that are happening on Wednesday, we're going to have Patrick Jones and Gary Cannon, because there's going to be some big doings at the city council tomorrow night, and there's some stuff going on today, too, down at the city council chambers at City Hall about deciding where to spend money. Is there going to be a bond issue or something like this? We'll talk a little bit about that later. But let's get back to Mark Kent and talking about the basics.
I just wanted to answer one question I heard that you asked earlier on Tax Day.
Okay.
Was why the 18th? Well, here's why. The 15th fell on Friday. The 18th is Friday is Emancipation Day in D.C. So they decided that in D.C. they were going to shut down all the offices, so they moved it out to the 18th. So that clears that up. So
okay.
I wasn't sure if that got answered. So anyway, back on track here. The first thing that we need to think about is the essentials in a survival plan. And that's the first thing, is making a plan. What you're going to need as a part of your plan is you're going to need to worry about shelter, water, first aid, fire, and food. Those are the five essential things that you need to understand. And pretty much depending on your situation, in that order. Shelter should be the first thing you're worried about, because hypothermia, heat stroke, those type of things are getting rained on and cold and so forth. So shelter is probably the most important thing, especially if you have a family and kids. Water would be second. You can survive without food for quite a while, but water is important. You can't survive more than a few days without water. First aid, if there's any casualty or wounds or problems because of this hazard, depending on the type of it is, that it is, a fire, you could have burns, earthquake, there could be broken limbs. There's so many different things to think about here.
Even small injuries that are not treated could become infected and
absolutely
become very serious injuries. So you've got to have a way of doing that.
Absolutely. And up here it's not quite as bad as in some other places. You're down in the tropics, for example. I cut myself in Jamaica at one point, and I was infected in like an hour or two because of the type of atmosphere they have. Up here, not so bad, but we still have to be prepared. Up here, any kind of first aid would be essential in the event of an injury. Fire, or heat, warmth, up here in the winter it gets fairly cold. In the summer it would be more like how to keep cool. And food. So those are the things that we want to talk about. And so the first thing that you need to think about is making a plan. And as part of that plan, the first step, in my opinion, would be to put together what's called a three-day go bag, a get-out-of-dodge bag, a good bag, they call it, a bug-out bag. It's got a bunch of different names. But it's essentially the same thing, and that would be a 72-hour preparedness, I got to get out of here quick bag. I keep one in my truck. I keep one in my car. just in case that you don't know where you're going to be at when the event occurs, you know. And so you might have to go stay at a school for 3 days. You might have to be in the woods for 3 days. You don't know exactly what your situation is going to be depending on where you're at if anything happens. You know, if you're out
could be moved into a FEMA camp.
That's absolutely, yeah. Boy. you never know.
Okay, now what we're talking about is you make your plan, okay, with the go bag. But and with that, like you said, someplace you could have to, if you had to pick up, if you might have to go to a school. You might have to go to a place because, you know, if, just as an example, down today, right now, in Texas,
right,
the wildfires are pushing into Austin, and you're watching people come, I mean, literally running out of their house,
yep,
hop in their car, they've got a dog under their arm, and nothing else, and they're taking off down the street. What would you do? What kind of stuff should you have with you if you had to do that? I mean, that's happening right now. You're watching it.
You should have a bag already together that you just pick up and take with you. I have a couple of them. We'll be demonstrating this week. One is a backpack that has everything that you could possibly think of that you need for a 3-day stint. Another is I have a fanny pack that's like a little run out the door grab, that'll keep you alive for 3 days. So that's why it's always the first step is this preparation of this go bag, because it does several things. It just getting started on something starts getting you mentally into the game here, because now you have to start thinking about what am I going to need. We've got lists of stuff, but there's all kinds of different go bags. You could have a go bag for a combat bag, for example. Let's say you're out in the desert, storm, you know. I mean, that's a whole different kind of a bag for a 3-day deal than it is if you just have the electricity go out and you have to, get out of the house for a while. Say the it shuts off or you have an earthquake and the gas line's broke and you got to go. Well, that's a lot different. So you got to kind of try to give an overall perspective of what is going to be in this bag. You know, the essentials, the food, the water, overnight clothes. Do you have kids? Do they have diapers that they need? Medicines, for example, for a prolonged stay. So that's the kind of things that we're going to talk more and more about that should be going into this bag. And again, we've done exercises where we've put bags together, and everybody's got their own personalized touch. It's absolutely incredible. When we first started doing this, we'd have people come in, and they would bring their bag in, and every week we'd have another person bring their bag in. So do we need to take a break here? Or,
we will be in 30 seconds. So, yeah. So, you know, one of the things, too, is that besides the bag is the plan.
Absolutely.
A written plan.
Absolutely.
And we'll come back. We'll be talking about that, too. But what happens if something happens and your family's all split up?
Yeah, everybody needs to have a plan where to meet and so forth.
Right. Okay, and we'll talk about that, too. Hey, this is Carl Lindebach, KCNR 1460. It's 8:30. We're talking about emergency preparedness, and this is Free Fire Radio. On KCNR 1460, it is 8:34 in the morning on April the 18th. It is 53 degrees out there, and this portion of the show is brought to you by Cypress Square Barbershop. Right off Athens Avenue, DC Tim and the Man in Black. What can I say? They give great haircuts, great prices. They give discounts to veterans. They support our community, and I bet you they're prepared for an emergency. It's man's last stronghold. What else can I say? Man's last stronghold. Cypress Square Barbershop. If they're not ready, who would be?
Okay, but I love this a comment in the chat room, and you'll love this, Timur. What you need in a survival kit is a pink .22 revolver. The bad guys see that sissified shooting iron, they'll think you're nuts and won't mess with you.
You know, we've got hockey stick is in, or a hockey man's in there, and he says, I need something to get serious with me because I can't reach out far enough with a hockey stick. But he did buy a good survival kit online, and he sent one to his daughter who's away at school, which is a good idea.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's talk planning, Mark.
Yeah, the plan should be, you know, how to protect your family is what you want to get involved in this planning. So, you know, I mean, about getting informed and getting your children involved on this plan, you know, getting them to be a part of it, you know, whether you send them out a go bag or whatever it is, whether they're away at school. We've got some people in the Tea Party where their kids are down in college in L.A. You know, what happens if we have a major shutdown or a major earthquake? Are they prepared? You know, so bringing them into the plan. So, you know the phone numbers of who to call, prepaid phone cards if necessary, if the phones are still working. Get them involved in making a plan on where they're going to go, where they're going to meet up, what's involved in this plan as far as food, water, shelter, get them involved in the process. Start assembling your disaster preparedness kits for each family member. Every member in the family should have their own kit, or at least access to something in the house that they can run out with. If they go out of town, then they should have it in their car, probably.
I agree 100%, because each person may have a little bit different. I just don't think I'll need the lip gloss in my kit, where Linda may be bringing that part out.
No, I'm thinking the pink 22 or whatever. It's just not going to do it for me either.
Well,
but,
the only thing mine is missing from that is a little Swarovski crystal on it. But anyway, let's talk about water. Did I miss anything? Because I know at the break we were talking about water, and I was thinking about your creature comforts, to be able to just go into the bathroom, and I know this is going to sound gross, but this is a reality. We all go to the bathroom, and you just can't flush the toilet, and if you had 3 or 4 days where your plumbing was out, that's just the beginning.
Right.
And everybody went in the backyard and started going to the bathroom. We have an issue with water, and of course, what we were talking at the break is if we were to go out and buy a gazillion flats and stick them underneath the house,
right.
So that they were away from the sun. But then you were saying something about another form or another way to be able to get your water outside of bottled water.
Well, I like to have a water filter. I've got several different kinds. The kind that you could take out, and there's a reverse osmosis filter that you can pull it in, and it's got a handle that you pull the water in, run it through the filter, and then put it out into a cup for drinking water. I also have what's called a Berkey water filter. It's a gravity-fed water filter. It will do about 12,000 gallons before you have to replace the filter. So it's a good one. They actually use it in a lot of. It's actually the one they use in the EPA office in Washington D.C. You can't have one sent to California. I still haven't figured out why that is. I actually had to go to Oregon to get mine. But
it's strange.
It's a great water filter. I don't understand why it's not available in California. But, that's what you need, is something that you can, take water out of your swimming pool if you needed to and dump it into the top and drain water out the bottom. What we need to think about here is water for drinking and sanitation. It should be about a gallon of water per person per day. And so you at least should prepare at least to have that much. If you're going to have an extended stay, you definitely need some filtration. But you need to decide whether you're going to stay or evacuate out of your house would probably be the number one issue. If you're evacuating, it's a whole different thing than if you're staying. So you kind of have to, make a call at what kind of disaster emergency that's happening here. Am I staying or am I going? If a fire's, like down in Texas where the fire's coming up the road, and, I was watching the news this morning, there's grandma in the wheelchair with her kids pushing her.
And they're pushing her down the road.
Her down the road. Yeah. Her hair's flying out in the breeze. I mean, it was unbelievable. I was thinking, I didn't see a 3-day bag on them.
I didn't see anything. I saw people running from their homes in absolute. The police are yelling at them and on loudspeakers, get out of your homes, get out of the area, and these people are just in shock. Okay, we've got to take a quick break. When we come back, let's go back to the planning part, and that we, how do you get, talking about if there is a disaster and your people are scattered, your family scattered, how do we, what's the plan? How do we get a hold of each other? The part about each person may have a different kind of bag. We need to kind of keep going with that there. This is Carl Linda Bott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. Carl Linda Bott, Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's 8:43 in the morning on April the 18th. A lot of things going on today. But we're talking emergency preparedness. We're also talking about all this is being brought to you by Tobacco and Brew. 2143 Hilltop Drive, and that's where we're going to be Friday, my friends, at noontime. Pass the word to your friends, because we're going to lay out all of this equipment. We're going to lay out go bags, example of go bags. We're going to have handouts to give to people.
Absolutely.
We're going to have websites. We're going to have all of these things for people to see, so you can start your emergency preparedness.
Go bags for Christmas.
Go bags for Christmas. You know what? Why wait for Christmas?
Yeah, I was just going to say Christmas is a while away.
Why not go bags for the 1st of May?
Easter.
Give Easter go bags. In fact, we have a go bag. We'll talk about that later. But at Tobacco and Brew, which is 2143 Hilltop Drive, come on down and join us at noontime on Friday. Joe and Shelley providing that space for us. And come on down. see what's out there, and join us, see the kind of things that you might need in case of an emergency. Okay, our guest, Mark Kent, and Mark, we're talking planning right
now.
Yeah,
let's go back to the planning aspect of it. And part of this is just starting to talk about the plan. You know, do I need to evacuate? Do I need to stay? You know, where do we go? And getting everybody involved in the plan, because everybody's situation is going to be individualized. You know, if you got a bridge out in front of your property and the bridge goes out and one person's on one side and one person's on the other, you know, we talked about the fact, and Linda brought up, I thought was a great point, is that a lot of times women are very reliant on the man of the house to take care of things. And that's why you got to get involved in this plan, because this mental aspect of it is that we're all intelligent people, well, at least we hope so, so that we start talking about this and getting the dialogue going, because every situation is so individualized, depending on what kind of disaster it is, where you're located at, what's going on. So we've all got to get pulled into this plan and start thinking about, as individuals, what are we responsible for in this plan? Ourselves, our go bags, where are we going to meet, what kind of communications that we're going to have, what kind of equipment do we need, all the above. So that's the start of it, is the dialogue. The first thing is, are we evacuating, are we staying, is probably the first thing to look at, because if you're staying, you're going to have a lot more access to food and things like that. If you're going, that's why the three-day bag is so important. If you have to go or bug out, you know, then you're going to have the maximum amount of survival gear that you can take with you, because you don't know whether it's going to be a three-day or a prolonged stay. So, you know, so that's the first thing, is just start the planning process, get your family involved, get your kids involved. You know, think about different aspects of where you're going to be. Are you evacuating? Where are you going to go if you have to go, and that type of thing. And then each individual starts putting together their own supply bag. You know, you can buy them completely online. And there's so many. See, survival and preparedness got really is really popular these days. I know survival is like a kind of a good thing, you know, making it through the disaster, especially after you see what happened in Japan. I mean, those guys are just devastated, and I'm not sure how many people were ready for that at that point.
They, you know, in Japan, just on a quick aside, they were probably closer to being ready for a huge earthquake than most people, because they've had earthquakes.
Right. No looting.
And they've been able to rebuild. They rebuilt a lot of their country after World War II, because it was destroyed.
Right.
But their society is a type of society that would help people. And what we're understanding, people calling, is that people are opening their homes and all that.
Right.
But still, hundreds of thousands of people are displaced because of the radiation dangers or because of what happened in the tsunami. Even people or a country or a nation that was prepared is still devastated.
Well, and that's why I think this is a community thing. That's why I've gotten so involved in this, is that my idea of this is to have all the community start pulling into this plan together. You know, obviously we want to be able to sustain ourselves as individuals, but the more that the community starts thinking about this, the better off everybody is, because we start planning for, you know, flood, fire, disaster, whatever it is, and we'll all be able to help each other if there's more people prepared than there's people that are not prepared. Obviously, if something happens, it's going to be a lot better, because you're not going to have as many people wandering around with the victim mentality of who's going to help me, okay? And that's number one. That's part of that mental preparedness and planning that we're talking about. And like I say, just opening the dialogue is 90% of this. You know, do you have any special needs in the plan? I mean, you know, effective shelters. You know, do you have children with special needs? Do you have medicines or things that grandma's got to have, you know, if you got to go? So there's all kinds of different things. So, you know, protect your family would be where you want to start. And then I would also start thinking about protecting your property in your plan. Because if you have to bug out for 3 or 4 days, you know, you might want to have your safe and put your flood insurance papers in there, for example, or for fire or you know, whatever happens to be, so that when you come back, you're coming back to something that hasn't been looted or taken or destroyed, or at least a place to start to pick up the pieces. Well, let's see. Where else can we go with this? I guess we could start with some of the supplies.
All right. So supplies.
Okay. So you know, we talked about...
Let me take a quick break right now. And we'll break early so we can come back and we can hit the supplies.
Okay. Our guest today is Mark Kent. We're talking about emergency preparedness. How prepared are you? Great details coming up. This is Carla Linda Black, KCNR 1460.
Back down. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460, 8:51 in the morning. Carl and Linda Bott. We're talking emergency preparedness week. This week, we've been talking about plans. You know, how to get yourself in a mental attitude and how to get a plan. Every day this week at 8 o'clock, we're going to be talking different aspects of emergency preparedness. And what a great day to start it off, because in 1906 we had the San Francisco earthquake. In 1906, we just destroyed so many things. Okay, let's go to the phones. Don, good morning.
Good morning. We're pretty well prepared at our home, but what really concerns me is maintenance medication. One of the things, people on Medicare, they cut it so tight and so short that if anything happens, you can easily run out of your medication and be in serious trouble. What do you suggest?
Absolutely. I think what you might want to do... what you might want to do is you might actually try to stack up a little bit of the medicine if you can possibly do that. You know, plan ahead is the best thing that you can do. Talk to your doctor. Tell them that, you know, you might need to have a little bit just in case there is an emergency of some sort. And try to stack up a little bit as much as possible, because if we do have an evacuation or a disaster like that, the possibility that there might not be any doctor or pharmacy available is very high. So you're going to have to do your best to try to put some extra supply together somehow.
Yeah, we'll address that later in the week, because it's really a good point, Don. Thanks for the phone call, because insurance companies will give it to you at the last second, and but they will not give you a month in advance. So how do you do that? Unless you have to pay for it yourself, and then for some people, they can never afford it. Okay, let's go on back to we were talking on the plan and essential items.
Again, planning to stay or go. You know, let's start covering planning to go. You know, if you're going to go, you know, you need to think about sleeping bag per person, depending on the climate, change of clothing. You know, shirts, pants, socks, things like that. A radio of some sort, preferably. I like the Sea Crane crank radios. They got them now to where you can crank the radio up, which charges it, and it also has a battery, a charger on it that you can charge your cell phone now. There's a link that you can get, and you just attach it to that, and you can charge your cell phone. So, you know, if you're not any place where there's power, but the cell phones are still working, that's a good option to do that. It also, they have, you know, flashlights on them, and, you know, the radios and so forth. Flashlights with extra batteries, first aid kits, you know, whistles to signal for help. It would be something that you might want to include.
Flares?
Flares. You know, maybe if you're way out in the woods, that might not be a bad idea. If you're if you're lost, or, you know, trying to have somebody find you, that might be a good thing. Otherwise, I don't think that would be essential necessarily. You know, if you're on the highway, a flare to keep from getting run over, you know, maybe. But no, I don't think I would go with flares necessarily. I would be thinking more in terms of the things that are for personalized care. You know, moistened towelettes, garbage bags with ties for personal sanitation, as we talked earlier. That might be a way to actually dispose of your waste in the event that you're out somewhere. You know, some kind of a utility device. You know, those Leathermans are great tools.
What's a Leatherman?
A Leatherman, you know, is the one that has the pliers and the knives and the screwdrivers. And, you know, the technician just pulled his out here, and he's got a bunch of them, or a bunch of stuff on this Leatherman.
Bad Bob's pulls knives on me a lot of times. You know, I mean, I don't ever mention it, really. But, you know, when we go to TV, you can watch Bad Bob.
We had a question from the chat room. You're talking about, and I don't want to get off subject, but this is also, what is it twice now? Plywood.
Plywood?
Yeah.
We're talking about plywood's importance to be able to, you know, to fix windows and all that.
Oh, that's, well, that's okay. That's more that's, like in a hurricane
yeah,
situation.
That's the kind
where
of
you,
thing.
Where, all right. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, in those cases, like down south where they have a hurricane, you know, or in Missouri, for example, where my nephew lives, I mean, the first thing you do when you hear about a tornado or a hurricane coming is you go out and board up all the windows so that they don't get smashed. That'd be there's lots of uses for plywood, yeah. But I don't think, you know.
Not for your goat.
I mean, it'd be pretty rough dragging a three-quarter.
Yeah, you can't do that for your go-to bag, but they were talking about that as far as in-home, if you decided to stay home. I don't know why, but I thought maybe I'd throw that at you. Okay, let's get back on subject when it comes to your go-to bag and what you take if you have to evacuate.
Yeah, a roll of plastic sheeting would be a good thing for a tent, for example, or a tube. They have these tube sheets where you can string up a tent out of a piece of rope in these plastic tubings I've seen that are really good. A can opener would be something that you would want to include in there. I mean, this just goes on and on and on and on and on.
We're going to have copies of these lists, and also we're going to have Red Cross in here with theirs, and we're going to make these available for you Wednesday or Friday down at Tobacco and Brew, that you can come down and pick up a list.
What
of
time
those.
Is the event at Tobacco and Brew Friday?
At 12 o'clock.
Okay.
12 noon.
Make sure you say it again.
Yeah, 12 noon, you come down, we're going to have all of these available for you.
Yeah, I mean, because like I say, this is such an expansive subject, depending on your situation.
Right.
That, you know, you can just go on and on and on with the different types of things, you know. And there's so many good resources for emergency planning. You know, on the web, you know, you can survival.com, survival blog. There's just a whole bunch of them that you can go to get more information. You know, the other thing to think about too is where are you going to be at? You know, are you going to be at work? Are the kids going to be at school? You know, that type of thing when you're making your plan. So, you know, you try to plan for all aspects of, you know, are you at home? Are you at work? Is everybody separated? Where should they meet up? You know, are you going to be keeping those supplies with you at all times, which I prefer? I keep in my truck. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that we want to think about. So, like I say, we could just go on and on
yeah.
and on.
And Mark, what I want to do is, okay, this was kind of the basic, let's get started, let's start talking about plans, all right? And so everybody has to make a plan.
Correct.
Where do we meet? What kind of special go bags should we have? You know, one, you know, probably for individuals. You know, somebody, Sun Golden here came in and said she's got these little portable tents, including one for the animals, their dogs, to take care of that. So then tomorrow we're going to be talking about a little bit longer extended stays. Is that correct?
Absolutely. The main thing that you want to hit right now is that you want to make sure that you're covering the five things that are the most important, and then you can expand off of that: the shelter, the water, first aid, you know, heat or cooling, you know, warmth, and food. You know, once you get those five things in order, then you can expand out from there on your go bag with your situation, so that you're starting to cover more intricate situations. You know, if you're in the woods, I mean, you know, you might want a whipsaw or you know, snare wire. I mean, there's just a lot of ways you can go.
Right.
So.
And we're going to be having that. We're going to have all that.
I don't know what a whipsaw or snare wire is.
I'll explain to you because we're way out of town, sweetheart.
Okay. See, those are those industry things that we need to know about.
All right, those are and we will have all that. We'll have examples of a lot of these on Friday down at Tobacco and Brew. Now, tomorrow we're going to be talking about expanding this out a little bit more, what we're going to do if it goes for a little bit longer. Also, we're going to be having a variety of guests this week to talk about this, but also we're still talking about what's happening right here in Reading. Wednesday, Patrick Jones and Gary Catt will be here because there's going to be a big discussion tomorrow at the city council. Just remember, it's the good guys against the bad guys. Which are you?
You've been listening to KCNR Shasta Reading.